afternoon, everyone. I think we're ready to begin. I'm Commissioner Mark Samulin, and honored to serve as chair of our Sustainability and Resiliency Committee. Delighted to be joined by my colleagues, Commissioner Aleman, Commissioner Malikoff. I believe Commissioner Steinberg will be joining us as well. We have Ms. Susie Torrienti, Betsy Wheaton from the administration, as well as Yanni Pineda as well, and then Nick Lurgis from our city attorney's office. It is April 23rd, 2019 at 1:30. We're going to jump right in. We usually start with our reports, but in the interest of a couple items we want to hear from Commissioner Steinberg, we're going to bounce around a little bit with those items. But we're going to start first with an action item number 4 on composting. And then when she comes, we'll get to her items. And as always, public comment will be welcomed as appropriate. So thank you for everyone joining us. And Betsy, I'll bounce over for item number 4 on composting, please.
Sure. Thank you, Commissioner Samulin. Yanni Pineda, our sustainability specialist, has been doing a lot of research and is going to be presenting this item. We also have representatives from the Botanical Gardens here today that are going to provide a more in-depth discussion on their composting program and how we could apply this to North Beach. So I'm going to turn it over to Yanni.
Not really.
I mean, I can hear you. But.
Does this work? Okay. So based on the recommendation and directions that we received during the last meeting in March, we looked at a couple of areas, most of them over in the West Lots. So a couple of proposed locations are the lot at the northernmost area of the city, which is at 87th Street. The exact address is 226 87th Terrace. And another one that we've been looking at as we've worked with other departments is the log cabin location adjacent to North Shore Open Space Park. We're estimating approximately $50,000 to $75,000 in startup costs to begin to get this program going. And we're recommending using the funds that were allocated for the North Beach Yard back in 2017. I think we allocated about $75,000 for the composting machine that the North Beach Yard was supposed to have. So we'd like to redirect those funds to this program, and we're asking the committee to refer this item to finance.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. I've been participating, and I'd like to hear from the Botanical Garden about how they might see this working in North Beach. But I've been participating in their hosted at the Garden composting program for the better part of a year, and it's really a treat. And thank you to the Botanical Garden for offering that amenity to the community for those of us that. That want to compost and learn more about it. And so I think you'll have some ideas about how we can branch out and connect to North Beach so that we can allow those residents who probably can't make it all the way down to 17th Street just for composting to be able to have a disposal site and also possibly improve the connections and awareness about the Botanical Garden in general and what's happening there. So are they prepared to speak on it? How would you see this working at a North Beach site?
Composting gets gardener a really deep soil knowledge. There you go. Community compost gives participants a social awareness and connection to the neighborhood. So we're really confident. Myself and Cassidy Fry, who's our in-house compost expert, and Sandy Shapiro, they were really huge in having this program be so successful. And, yeah, I'm here to answer any questions that you have and our ability to move and expand our hub up there. I think it would be a really seamless, wonderful experience for everybody involved.
And looking at the two sites, do we have a recommendation as to which of the sites is a better fit for the composting?
Sure. This item we've been working with our parks department as well as our green space management, environmental, upon further investigation, we felt that the old location where the log cabin used to stand would be an ideal place to implement this. There's already a fence in place, which would reduce the cost to install a fence because we would want to have the site secured, one. And two, there's a potential for that site to be redeveloped for the North Beach Yard in the future, and the North Beach Yard has expressed wanting compost. So it's a great way to get the community comfortable with composting and using this potential site, and then I think that the recommendation would be to start there and then evaluate the size, the success of the program, what adjustments need to be made to see if it could be further expanded.
And I just had one more question. Would residents be able to take or purchase compost, fully completed compost, the way they can from the botanical garden? Would we be able to support that at the site as well? That's a great benefit to be able to have access to that.
I think that would be something that we could look into if we choose to partner as a city with the botanical gardens to provide that to individuals who do use the site, that they would be able to not only drop off their composting, but they'd also be able to pick up. And, you know, of course, there would be a small charge for receiving that.
So, for me, I love the partnership with the botanical garden because they're already experts in composting, so we don't have to hire. What do you have there?
I want to.
Oh, it's beautiful. Look at that.
It's beautiful soil, and it's going to be spread through the garden, and
gorgeous.
It's spread through the community.
Steinberg.
And that was your banana peels and your shells.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
And the bigger picture here is that it's 100% organic, really fertile soil, and it's just so healthy. And we're really trying to just get away from conventional fertilizer 100% at the garden, and this big push working with Cassidy and fertility, I think it can just be spread all over the city in a really positive and sustainable way.
Wonderful. Members, questions, comments?
Hi, Rick Kendall. We used to have a composting program at the log cabin before a previous administration kicked them out so they could rent the space to a landscaper friend. So it worked well. The log cabin would be great. The 87th Park location is, please don't do that. We have $50 million condos across the street. We don't need a composting program right there. It's also, you know, there's no bathrooms. There's nothing there. Where we have done composting in the past, there's been issues with people putting meat products, lawn services dropping off their grass that contains fertilizer and organics. So this would have to be, for me, I wouldn't want anything that wasn't secure all the time. So if there would be somebody there at all times or locked up so you couldn't just drop off.
So the proposed, but based on our initial discussions and how we would like to see the program formatted, the site would be 100% secured with a fence, so the general public every day would not have access. And there instead would be a bin, which then residents would be able to drop off their composting too. We spoke with the botanical gardens, and one idea that we had would be to have open hours where when they are up there servicing the site, that there could be hours in which the community could come and learn how to compost and be a part of it. But for the majority of the time, that area would be secured unless there was an individual on site.
Okay, and we wouldn't allow meat products, dairy products, none of those it would be.
And signage plays a really huge key at the botanical garden. It's pretty much an open system. Someone's not there 100% of the time, though we're walking past it. But you'd be surprised with really great signage and making it very clear on what's good and what's bad, how people listen and really read.
Thank you. Just log cabin, please.
Okay.
So it sounds like...
Wonderful. So I think I heard the idea was to refer to finance. Is that the
That's
motion?
That's the motion, yep.
Okay.
I'll move with the log cabin site as the preferred site, a referral to finance.
I second the motion.
Okay. Show it done by acclamation. Thank you
very
much.
Would like
to. That's to get the funding together, right, and approve that, right?
Yes.
Because Commissioner Malikoff just asked about the money side.
Yes. Our recommendation would be to use that $75,000, which had already been earmarked for sustainable initiative of composting, to be redirected for this program.
Do we have any idea what the timetable is for the North Beach Yard?
Based on some of the initial conversations we've had, it's kind of not moving forward at this moment. So that's another reason, in order to expedite activity in the area, we thought this could be a good project.
Thank you.
Okay, wonderful. Let's move. We're delighted to be joined by our colleague, Commissioner Steinberg. She has a couple items, so we're going to take item number 8, and then we're going to go to item number 3. But so if we can start with item 8, Commissioner Steinberg, you're the sponsor, or Ms. Wheaton can kick us off here.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me today. Elizabeth, do you want to help present the item?
All right. Thank you, Commissioner. So moving back to a few years ago, back in, I don't have the exact dates. So about a year ago, the direction had been given to John Ripple with Beach Operations and Miami-Dade County to look at the amount of trash that we had accumulating on the beach. We were seeing that there was more volume of trash being generated on the beach side than there had been in previous years. Upon looking at why this was occurring, one of the elements that was contributing to this additional waste was non-reusable containers. So plastic cups, plastic bags, paper bags, to-go containers that were coming from the concessions in the upland. Concurrently, at the time that this item was being discussed, there was also a number of plastic-free initiatives that were coming forth, including removing polystyrene from operations citywide, as well as just overall solid waste reduction. So that we merged these two discussions and looked for a way that we could streamline how our concessions and beachfront operations, what they were producing. We met with a number of hotels, both hotels such as the SLS, which had already implemented a reusable program, as well as a number of hotels that were interested in implementing a reusable program or, actually weren't interested, to get feedback. What works, what doesn't work, and what were the barriers to moving to 100% renewable? Following the first meeting, some of the feedback that we received was mostly operational, that these businesses felt as though they would have to greatly change their operations, and they weren't really ready to do that. And we brought this back to commission, and the direction we received was to have another focus group to ask again, we hear you, but what would it take if we were to phase in a program? What would you want to see? And the feedback that we received at that second focus group a few months ago was that it would really have to, if we wanted to see this move forward, it would have to be on a regulatory standpoint. The operations such as this the SLS, the Eden Rock, the Addition, who were committed to removing those single-use plastics and non-reusable wares, had already done that. And they were showing that it was saving them money. But these other businesses that had not been implementing, for them, they saw it, the operational costs to be something that they weren't willing, you know, at this time, they did not want to move forward with. But if the city did create an ordinance or required via their contract that they had to use 100% reusable, they would move in that direction. So from that point, we met again internally to come up with recommendations, and it is staff's recommendation that we would move forward requiring that all beachfront concessionaires use 100% renewables. Our beach is our number one asset. It is the resource in which people come here, but it also is a resource that is trashed by the public. And so this is one step to prevent that additional litter that's being generated. So one, two, in order to give those beachfront concessions and beachfront hotels time to adjust, the recommendation would be that this would come into effect as part of their contract in the year 2020. So that would be October 2020. They would be informed this year that, if this was passed, that this is coming up in a year. So there would be that educational period that they could begin to adjust their operations in order to make it financially feasible.
And if I may, please. So we'd be doing this as a phasing in, and it wouldn't even commence until 2020. To give them a full year, a fiscal year, from October to October to implement, and so that it's not a burden but something that they want to work with us and understand that we want to work with them as well, the hoteliers and the concessionaires. But what's really staggering is, historically, if you look at the memo, the collection of 300,000 pounds monthly was a rarity. Again, 300,000 pounds of trash we're talking about was a rarity. But that became an earmark, being achieved only once or twice annually through 2010. In 2014 and 2015, 2016, the collection of trash from the beach exceeding 300,000 pounds in a single month occurred four times. So now we went from just maybe once or twice to four times. And since then, now again in 2017, the monthly trash collection exceeded 400,000 pounds. So it's an ever-increasing amount of trash that is being disposed and left littered on our beaches. Which, so there's, of course, an environmental component, but there's also a reality about this and the cost and the trash and everything that's... We all need to work together to do this, and I think it took us a year and a half to work with the hoteliers and the beach concessionaires, but I think everybody's on board now, and they understand. And actually, some of these hotels that you mentioned have done it on their own, and they've seen a cost savings. So I think it's a win-win. So what I would ask from this committee is to give it a positive recommendation so we can start the process at commission.
Thank you. Commissioner Alamon.
I appreciate all the work on this one. I think it's really important. And, I know that it's also not new. You've been working on this for some time and started with the discussion about recyclables. But I think what you observed is that even if the products purchased were recyclable, they were not being recycled. And they were just contributing, again, to litter. So I think the emphasis on them being reusable, truly reusable, is going to really help with the efficacy of the program. So I would move it forward with a positive recommendation from this committee.
Okay. Anyone from the public want to speak on this item? No? So I'll just weigh in. I'm supportive of this as well. We've got a litter and a trash issue. We've done the right thing in terms of the homework. We've been listening to the business community. We've seen some savings from it. I think the one-year sort of phased-in approach is very prudent. If there are issues or things that come up, we've got 12 months to deal with it. So I, too, am favorably disposed. So I think we have a motion on the table.
Yeah, I second it, and this includes the starting date of October 1st. Am I correct?
The starting date would be October 1st, 2020, and then...
For the ordinance to be enforced. Is that
correct? It would actually be an amendment to the contract, and so the contract term beginning October 1st, 2020 would require that be 100% reusable.
Right, by October 1st, 2020.
Okay,
correct.
Good. And if not, they have a revocation of their agreement to operate on public property, meaning the beach.
This would be an amendment to the beachfront concession rules, and then something that would be incorporated in the concession agreements. Good. So, like any other term, they would be required to comply with it.
Right, we're amending basically the terms.
Okay, so show it done by acclamation. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Commissioner Steinberg is still with us here, so this is good news. We'll keep on her items. Item number three is a discussion on expanding the plastic bag ordinance in Miami Beach, sponsored by Commissioner Steinberg, co-sponsored by Vice Mayor Michael Gongora as well. Who would like to, Commissioner, would you like to kick us off, or would you like to hear from the city attorney or the
administration? I mean, I'll just give a quick... I understand that this was heard already, and I know that we have a preemption situation. I'm fully aware. The city attorney's office has made me very aware. But I just want to point out that there are things that sometimes that I feel we need to make a stand on, and I think this is one of them. To the extent that we can, again, it's a matter of what we want to see moving forward. I just want to give you some examples. In Coral Gables, obviously, we know they have a full plastic ban, and currently they're in litigation. We're actually waiting on the ruling, and I've never heard of a ruling taking this long. How long has it been?
The oral argument in the Coral Gables litigation was in December of 2017, so it's now been it's almost a year and a half.
Yeah. So that's interesting. Just so you know, Gainesville has also put forward a plastic bag ban. Their enforcement began August 1st, or will begin in August 1st. They have 10-plus public stores in their community, so that will have a huge impact. St. Petersburg is in the process of passing a 5-cent fee on plastic bags that would be implemented in 2020. I believe Sarasota is working on something, and St. Augustine Beach as well. Bell Harbor just recently passed last month a full plastic ban initiative. So some attorneys have taken the opinion while it's out, while there's been no determination or court ruling, we can act as a city, and should the ruling come back in a manner that upholds the preemption, then we would have to repeal. And if it didn't, then maybe we go forward. So I wanted to bring that up and see where the colleagues' thoughts were.
Nick, do you want to give us some background?
Well, legal answer.
They're discussing it in Tallahassee right now.
They are. Okay. So as to plastic bags, the city is broadly preempted by state law,
yeah,
and it's actually one of the broader preemptions. It's any rule, any resolution, any ordinance pertaining to plastic bags. The city of Coral Gables adopted a polystyrene ordinance after ours that was subsequently challenged by the Florida Retail Federation and the state of Florida. The circuit court ruling in that case, in the case surrounding the Coral Gables polystyrene ordinance, the circuit court ruling struck down both the polystyrene preemption and the plastic bag preemption as unconstitutional. So it was under that authority that Coral Gables went forward and adopted an ordinance pertaining to plastic bags. Now, that order has been appealed to the Third District Court of Appeal. The oral argument, as I just mentioned, took place in December of 2017. There's been no ruling in the matter. We suspect it may be because one of the members of the panel was elevated to the Supreme Court, and so that may have caused some delay in concluding the case. But regardless, during the pendency of litigation, our office has consistently advised you all and your colleagues that we should absolutely not regulate in this area until litigation is resolved so that we don't expose the city to unnecessary litigation. There are a number of other types of single-use plastics that we have regulated and potentially that we could regulate. We adopted a plastic straw ordinance that applies to city property, city facilities, our sidewalk cafe permittees, our special event permittees, and any of our vendors. Consistent with the timeline of the adoption of our polystyrene legislation, the committee may wish to explore expanding the plastic bag regulations to retail stores or food service providers, which is what we did with polystyrene. We have a citywide polystyrene ordinance.
Just said plastic bag.
When?
To expand to retail, not plastic straw. Just saying.
If I said when I was talking about expansion, I'm referring to plastic straws and single-use plastic straws, but you know, bearing in mind that there are a number of preemption bills under consideration now in the legislature, so the committee may wait to may be interested in waiting to see what the legislature does, and then after that we take up the possibility of expanding our plastic straw legislation. But regardless, the plastic bag preemption remains in place, and we have advised against regulating in that area until the case is resolved.
So what say you, colleagues?
I think we should wait. I think we are advised to take our city attorney's opinions on items like that, which involve litigation. And they are talking about it right now in Tallahassee. It was just written up. And it may go through committees. It may die. Then again, they may actually act on it. It's been a couple of years. So they're also talking again about plastic straws. And it looks like that might be thwarted this time. So I think we should wait, personally. I don't see putting it on the books and then repealing it when we can get sued in the meantime.
And we have an amicus, don't we, on the Coral Gables case that we filed?
We filed a friend of the court brief in the Coral Gables case in support of the city and in support of the home rule authority of all municipalities to regulate and protect our environment.
I mean, I understand, and I always heed the city attorney's advice, but there are times where, as a city, we've taken stances on things that we've been preempted from because we felt they were the right thing to do. So it is a policy call, ultimately, and the city attorneys are more than capable to defend any action that we do up here, and we do heed your advice. If no one's – obviously, I'm not going to bring it forward if there isn't the comfort level, right? I'm not going to put my colleagues in a position where they don't want to go against necessarily the advice of our city attorney, even though I feel strongly. But maybe there are other things we can do and should be doing other than just writing letters to, you know, retailers to please stop using plastic bags. Maybe there are other things we can do, and maybe this is an opportunity for us to really make a difference and move the needle in the right direction by coming up with out-of-the-box thoughts.
Commissioner, when is this session over?
May. End of May. No, March, April. Beginning of May, rather.
Beginning of May. So, we could maybe just continue it to next month.
Yeah.
I think that all of us are very, very firmly committed to reducing our use of plastics.
I know that.
You know that. But maybe if we just need to wait one more month to see what happens in Tallahassee, maybe the path will be more clear.
You know what? I'm good with that. And maybe what we could also do is, if you all are open to it, have the city attorney work on something. Language that they bring back to this committee, and let's just have a look at it and see what the language would look like and how we would draft something.
Language to do what?
To expand our plastic bag ban.
What I can provide the committee with is copies of the similar legislation that has been drafted for polystyrene and plastic straws, because if we were to, let's say that the state preemption were ultimately struck down or repealed, we would follow that same path that we did with polystyrene in regulating plastic bags, if and when we had that authority.
That's a good point.
But maybe I could provide those as examples of what we're already doing with other single-use plastics.
Yeah.
Okay. Commissioner?
Maybe, I'm not sure if all the other cities have implemented identical legislation. Maybe if we could understand what each of the cities are doing and how that varies so that we could find our sweet spot. Maybe that would be also something that could come back.
Yeah.
So at least secure if they have ordinances, could we look to secure those existing ordinances?
You know, I've looked at a few of them, and without belaboring the point at the meeting, there are a number of real challenges in regulating an area where you're expressly preempted. And this is one of the broadest preemptions, the preemption on plastic bags. So I'm happy to come back with a report on what other cities are doing, sure.
Okay.
And also, alternatively, we may want to start thinking about ways to, if we can't regulate it mandatorily, try to find an encouragement and a mechanism to reward behavior in the city and start looking at people who are looking to phase out plastics in certain ways of the larger, especially the larger retailers in our city, and see what we can come up with as a city to maybe help incentivize that.
Yeah.
We could think about having reusable Miami Beach bags, the cloth bags, the kind we used just recently with the plastic-free promotion.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go. In terms of our current plastic-free Miami Beach, how has this topic been addressed to date? Are there potential opportunities that we could explore?
Both with our anti-litter program, Keep MB Clean, and our plastic-free campaign, Plastic-Free MB, we do provide reusable bags. And so when we're at events, we do give reusable bags to the community. We also have a partnership with Coca-Cola. Through that agreement, we use a portion of the merchandising funds in order to purchase reusable bags that we do give out at events. And that's currently how we are, as a city, providing reusable bags to the community.
Okay. Anyone from the public? Mr. Dobler, I sense you had a couple thoughts for us.
Hi, Dave Dobler, 800 West Avenue. The interesting thing that's happening in Coral Gables right now is that all of the shops have gone plastic bag free. If the preemption stands and Coral Gables can no longer do so, can regulate them, the businesses are going to have a really hard time from consumers switching back. So just by establishing what societal norms will be moving forward as far as no plastic bags, you know, we can implement something and then, you know, let the consumers then have the backlash when the when public sues. I think that they're facing a lot of backlash already from consumers who are up in arms knowing that they're the ones behind all of these statewide preemptions. I seem to remember a commissioner many years ago saying, let them sue me. And why not? You know, we can put something that should, you know, should the preemption be upheld or should fail in the courts, then this automatically goes into effect. But okay. I'm sure legal minds are much better than mine.
We actually had that. We wrote that into our plastic bag ordinance on sidewalk cafes, and the city commission amended that ordinance to make it apply immediately.
Okay. So. I sense that the sponsor is comfortable with the next step
of
deferring for a month.
Yeah.
We're going to also understand what the other cities have done. We're going to see what the legislature has, actions that they have, and we're going to bring this back and continue the dialogue.
Yeah, I think just with anything, education is important and phasing in is important and a long timetable is important because the last thing we want to do is have an unintended consequence to our small businesses. It's not the intent at all. It's to all work together towards a, you know, healthier future.
Very good.
So thank you.
So we'll bring this back next month.
For indulging me today.
So did you want to speak on this item, Bob? You do. Okay. Before we move on, last comments here.
All right. I just think that you need to look at this thing in a bigger picture. I'm listening to compost. I'm listening to the trash on the beach. I'm listening to plastic bags. And it seems to me that what we really need to look at is a very comprehensive program that includes all of this, at the same time a major education program to the people who can come to this city to respect us, let alone the people who live here. Quite honestly, I think the program that's being addressed right now is kind of like blah. Don't take it personal. It's just it's not exciting. It's not an invitation. And I think the issue really needs to be one of respect yourself, respect us, and here's what we're asking for. Doug and I have been recycling plastic for God knows how many years. So we're one of the good guys besides how we do our recycling in general. But I think not everybody is participating. And then the question is, are you going to back to paper as an issue? Then that means trees cut and everything else. That's another issue. And then the question is, what is the city doing in terms of its own pollution regarding, for example, Biscayne Bay or other issues, which I'll get into later. But my concern is you need a big comprehensive program instead of something that looks like Band-Aids.
Thank you for your comments. So we'll now go back to our reports. We usually start with those because they set sort of the context. So I will bounce it off to Susie and Betsy, I guess, in terms of the status of our item number one, our resiliency strategy work plan, planned and in progress resiliency projects.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You have a copy of our work plan that distributed before the meeting, and in your package you do have the project update that David can answer any questions. I just wanted to highlight a few things from our work plan. We are really very close to releasing our Resilient 305 strategy that we've been working on with our partners, the county and Miami. Save the date. That's going to be May 30th. You're all, of course, more than welcome, especially this committee, as the Sustainability and Resilience Committee. There's not a date or a time yet. There's a whole team working on it, and Miami Foundation is taking the lead on having some sort of a community event that day. At the same time, Amy and I have been working with the team in developing our updated strategic plan. We are working that through that lens of resilience, taking everything we've learned through the 100RC process, but marrying that with the commission goals, with the management objectives of our departments, and we've now aligned all the different objectives and deliverables in the city manager's approved contract. So that'll be in the strategic plan, so to ensure that we are going to be implementing. Also, here in the first page of the work plan, I did want to mention and really recognize that Amy, Betsy, and Maria Serna from CIP, they've had a couple of very successful training sessions for our project managers, really operationalizing resilience into all our capital projects, really beyond just stormwater. And I think that's been really eye-opening, two really good trainings, and now we've incorporated resilience into the budget worksheets that go through the process and the capital process. And I just met with procurement this morning to make sure that we're following through. And as projects are coming through the hopper, whether it's a GOB project or it's a capital project, that the training and the information in the budget makes its way to the procurement process. So really a much more structured way of operationalizing some of this work. I know that you have several finance committee meetings in June and July talking about the budget. There's a couple of, I think June 14th is the capital budget one. You may want to carve a little time in there to talk about the capital projects and the resilience component if this committee desires. That would be our recommendation. On the number four on the work plan is the projects. Like I said, David is here to answer any questions. Perhaps Public Works is as well. I'm not sure. I can't see through this very dark thing. Okay. Thank you, Roy. And I did want to highlight a few kind of interesting special projects that I think are of interest to this committee. The work of our consultant on the historic preservation guidelines, it's underway, and they're doing a lot of research. And we're also hosting a meeting of the Shulman consultant with the Jacobs consultant, so that we make sure that the work that we're doing with the historic districts and those guidelines, that it informs Jacobs and Jacobs informs us. So we're really trying to work in that interdisciplinary fashion. The business case analysis work continues also. It's on time as well, and there's a lot of modeling going on. We'll probably hopefully be able to give you more of an update maybe during the summer. We continue to monitor what's going on with FEMA. We sent a letter to commission about a month ago. They announced, or kind of prematurely announced, some changes in how they're going to be doing their flood program. We had a conference call with FEMA, but really there's no new news yet. But that is on our radar screen, and I know that from time to time you're asked and we're asked about NFIP, so we do continue to monitor it. You'll see on your commission agenda next week, after it's been approved at land use and at finance, we've developed a scope of work for the updating our land use regulations through that lens of resilience. So we have a nice scope of work that'll be on your agenda in next week. And then finally, the Palm View project, which is a small kind of master plan for the Palm View neighborhood. We had some discussions both at land use and here over the last probably a year or so. That project is underway. There's a lot of homework that's being done by the consultant. There was a community meeting, and we're working on a community survey, and the consultant is now working on getting information from the property tax appraiser's office. So we're really trying to develop a 20-year master plan for that small community, because they're really trying to figure out how do they fit into all the changes physically here in near the convention center, this convention center area, what's happening in terms of flooding and sea level rise, and just sort of the economics of their neighborhood. So that's a nice project that I think will be very interesting and can probably inform other neighborhood projects moving forward. So I'll give you updates as they are available. And that's my report.
Wonderful. Thank you for that. Commissioner Malikoff?
Yes, thank you. I was at the Palmview neighborhood meeting, and it was very, very interesting. I think that the consultant is doing a good job. But one thing that perhaps should be described in greater detail is that the people who it has to do with the Historic Preservation Board, I had made a recommendation that somebody who lives in a historic district should be in the open seats, not just somebody who once lived in a historic district. And Palmview is a perfect example. They're having a lot of problems with sea level rise in their historic district. And in order to make their district no longer historic, it goes to a referendum to the public, to all the citizens vote on it, not just the people who live in Palmview. And even within Palmview, there are different opinions. So I think it's important when the consultant meets with the neighborhood again that the Palmview voices are those that are listened to and not outside people that are there for different reasons. You know, for their own purposes, they want to promote to make sure historic preservation, that district remains. It may be that it should remain and we can work with them within the historic district. It may actually need a referendum so that the buildings can be demolished and built higher, because it's right next to the water, and water is coming in.
Right.
It's possible that through the consultant, there might be ways now in the historic district that that some buildings that are the lowest level where they have the biggest problem can be demolished and new ones, built up at a higher base flood elevation. Mm-hmm. But I think it's very important that we listen to the voices within the Palm Butte neighborhood.
And if I may, one of the challenges of having a community meeting at 6 o'clock is that
you're open to the public.
It's open to the public, but then it's very hard sometimes for some people to attend. And so the other thing that we're doing is that we want to mail a short survey to all the residents, because then that gives everybody an opportunity who couldn't physically come to the building. And then that way they have, they can take a short survey at any time of the day that's convenient and send it back to us and help inform the process.
That's an excellent idea.
Thank you.
Okay. So we have David Martinez from CIP, and I want to thank the team and the administration for putting together a nice complete summary of some of the projects that are going on. Here's my suggestion that what might ask David to do is just top line, the one-liner on the projects that, are in front of us, the ones that we're hearing a lot about that are front and center. I don't know that we need to go through every single one. And then, of course, my colleagues may have questions and comments, as I might, on some of them. And then what we would do on a go-forward basis is look for just sort of redline updates. This is what changed in the last month. So if that's acceptable as a process, David, what I'd ask you is I think there are a few projects that we spend quite a bit of time on. Maybe you could start by giving us those updates, and then we'll sort of give you feedback or comments as we go, if that's okay.
But before we get started, please, can I ask, where we were going to have this in writing as part of this agenda?
We do.
We do. Where?
So,
online.
Yeah. Online.
Okay.
Yep.
So I don't have that in the printed one.
Okay. Let's see. Do you have a copy there, Commissioner Marlowe?
We'll give you ours.
Okay, hang on.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, right. So we do have the copy on online. So, David, could you tee us up on the ones you think we need to focus a little, and just very top-line summary, please?
Sure, and just very quickly, the way we've put this together, and again, we're open to suggestions if you want to see it in different ways. Well, one thing I'm going to do is put some numbers on it so we can say project number 7, and at least we can, it's easier to describe. But what we've done is obviously we've broken it up into three parts: projects that are in design, projects that are what we consider pre-construction, which are very near entering the construction phase, and then obviously the construction projects, which would include a design build award. we will still put those in the construction section. To recap, we have included 15 projects. This by no means are all the projects that we're all working on, but these are 15 projects that have a significant sustainable and resilient element or elements in it. Pretty much any project we do in the city will have some form of sustainable resilience, but these are projects that have been highlighted. And also to summarize of the 15 projects, there's three projects that are part of the general obligation bond program. I can probably start talking, maybe bring those up very quickly to identify those, and maybe I can do that in future worksheets to indicate that this is a GOB project. Maybe
sure.
That works.
That'd be helpful.
So with that, and I'll try to just go very quickly through here. Highlight projects, Indian Creek, Phase 3. We all know that's a very high project. I was in a meeting today with Roy. Roy, if you want to touch base on it, but the design has been completed. It's being reviewed by the city and also by DOT with the intent of putting it out on the street in the early part of May. To go ahead and come back. And I know the Public Works is also working on something that you all voted at the last commission meeting for approving a change order to do some intermediate revisions to the road to fix some of the mains of traffic. I don't know, Roy, you want to include anything else?
And so, colleagues, if we have comments or questions as the project comes up, probably the right time. So I understand it's on our agenda Wednesday, so we are going to talk about Indian Creek. There is a discussion item. That said, just a couple sort of top lines. One, in terms of the public information officers, I saw that we do have some folks, but there was some question in the community. Have we fully communicated to the stakeholders who their go-to is if they have questions? Has that been checked off?
Commissioner Samuelin, yes, it has. We attended the Mid-Beach Neighborhood Association meeting last week. There was probably about 20 people from city staff, including the mayor and his office. We carried a presentation on the project there, but they didn't have time for that presentation at that meeting. So we were there, and we talked to people one-on-one. We made sure they knew who all of the appropriate contacts were, and we stand prepared to give them that presentation whenever they desire it.
That's wonderful. And just one other question before I turn over to my colleagues as well. The traffic pedestrian issues are one we're trying to address. We've allocated some funds. Rough best timing when some of those changes will be put in place to alleviate the situation that we're hearing from residents on.
The change order that you approved at the last commission meeting has been awarded, and we anticipate that work in June. And that is going to be three very significant items that are going to be highly visible. One is opening up a second lane of traffic for about four blocks of the southern end of the project. That's going to make people have the ability to get around stopped buses, which seems to be one of the biggest bottlenecks. The other item is a temporary pedestrian crossing at the south end of the project that necessitated closing some sidewalk that will allow us to open that and open some left turns. You've probably heard some complaints from a few condo associations on the south end of the project. They weren't able to turn left off Indian Creek because of that, and it'll open those up too. So in June, you should see those three large improvements.
Okay. Other comments on Indian Creek?
Oh, on Indian Creek.
Okay. Nope. Then let's keep rolling. Next project.
Okay. And I'm just picking what the ones I feel are probably high profile. The Par 3 Park. I know it's a big deal. It has a very...
GO bond money.
Yes, that is a GO bond project. It has a large component that addresses sustainability and resiliency. We are programmed to receive the complete 60% developed drawings end of May. Those will be submitted and start the regulatory process because of the lake that's going to handle a lot of the runoff from the neighborhood and all that. It's going to be looked under a different lens from the regulatory agencies, so that's going to be a longer process. The intent is to have it ready to be out to bid towards the end of the year with an award. I'm projecting an award being brought back to commission by either December or January is our goal right now. So that will be when you'll see that.
Hoping to be here. Too bad.
What ended up happening, Commissioner,
when is remediation going to be done?
Well, that includes the remediation. That includes all the remediation and the whole project. What ended up happening, we were at about 90% design projected last year towards the end of the year.
Why are we only at 60% now?
Because we added the resilient and sustainable elements through the GOB, and that had involved redesigned so that we can implement several million dollars worth of resiliency into the project. So it had to be deconstructed so that it could move forward with a new design. So that's a little bit of delay.
The design is still Sabino and Miller?
Yes, it is.
Very similar, just that.
Yes, it's pretty much what most of what your recollection. We will be bringing back, we were asked at the GOB Oversight Committee, we were asked to bring back at the next meeting a presentation to the committee as to what the park looks like. Many of the members were not familiar with what the park looks like, so we're going to do that at the advisory committee. So that's that.
David, question on that one. So how are you doing that design? Since we don't have the new design criteria yet for the full stormwater infrastructure plan, therefore you don't really, there must be some question marks about the right-of-way and what that infrastructure is. How are you designing the impact of the park?
Well, with the approach that we took, and again, we've been working hand-in-hand with our friends at Public Works as well as our consultants. And again, the consultant, even though it is Sabino Miller, he does have a series of sub-consultant experts in subject matter related to sustainability and resiliency. So the way we're looking at it is we will be collecting runoff from the neighborhood into the lake system. It will be held in the lake system in order for quality treatment of that stormwater. And in theory, the idea would be to hopefully have it percolate through the site and never have to make it off-site. Obviously, we do have to make some modifications to allow it if at some point in time there's too much water being received by the project, we'd have to stop it or have the ability to get rid of it. And that is the kind of things that the environmental agencies want to make sure that we have crossed all our T's and dotted all our I's with. So we're also even including other elements such as solar power on the lighting and there's a few others, the lake being the largest of the elements that we're addressing. So it's stuff that's still along the lines of what ELI had recommended. It's along the lines of the bioswale type approaches that Roy's working on in the pilot projects up north and things of that nature. So we're still working with the same guidelines. It's just that we, in order to advance it, we're working with the consultants we have on hand.
Okay.
Just a couple more. Maybe you want to hear a little bit of palm and hibiscus just because we had some of the items that we discussed over the past.
Yes.
Project is it is moving forward at the rate that we were hoping. Maybe we always hope a little faster, but it's moving at an adequate rate. Things, for example, that are very noticeable if you were to drive into Palm Island is that center area that was pretty much destroyed for a while. It should be 100% completed this week in terms of the whole roundabout and pavers and all that. They're working on the medians. We're incorporating, even though I don't show it here as a GOB project, but because it's separate, is the landscaping enhancement that will follow the project. And then we're in the process of getting the two out of the three state pump stations that are there online, hopefully within the next couple of 3 weeks. So there is movement. As a matter of fact, today we have processed the change order that the commission approved back in October or December, in order to address the private properties and the drainage issues with harmonization. So I have a meeting, actually, as a matter of fact, late this afternoon with the design builder, with folks from Public Works, to kick off that going forward.
Has everybody signed their harmonization agreements? Because I know for some number of months, I would see someone sort of complaining about their harmonization on social media or otherwise. And when I would follow up with the project manager, I would learn that, in fact, they were not signing their harmonization agreement, sometimes because they wanted the city to pay for things that they should pay for, like putting down, decorative pavers and things like that. What's the current situation with the signing off of the harmonization agreements?
The answer to your question is no, and there's a real good reason. It's not because not everybody necessarily doesn't want to. It's because this new effort that involved that change order that you all approved, now the design builder is able to rethink the lots. Remember, in January, you also passed a modification to the drainage policy that affected this. So that is what kind of sort of we had to huddle back and rethink what did that all mean and how does it affect this project. So I think we have received the opinion from Public Works as to their interpretation of how they want to proceed with that. We have provided that to the design builder. We have even discussed it with DERM, and today is the kickoff to that so that now they can start looking at it through a different lens and start working through what that January directive is going to do. So now is when we're going to rethink it and go back to each property owner affected, and then they'll have the opportunity to sign off on harmonization agreements.
Great. When the pump stations are put in, how soon thereafter can we get the landscaping around them to beautify the beautiful pump stations?
We want to proceed with that very quickly.
Please.
That is the intent. They're already... other than the remaining areas that will look like they're heavily impacted will be, of course, the medians on Palm Island, which are pretty extensive, and the areas around the pump stations. So once the pump stations are done, we can start working on those areas. And then what we're trying to do is marry the GOB funds with the work that Lonzo's got to do, the contractors has to do with respect to mitigating trees and making a cohesive plan. We do have plans and all that.
I think it's very important that they get landscaped as soon as possible.
They will.
And what about the pump station that's sitting outside of 17th, the one on outside of Publix in Sunset Harbor?
That is one of the projects that's on here.
Yes.
The
is
Sunset Harbor screen. It's in design. We ran into a little glitch.
It's been in design for 3 years.
Well, I don't know if I've had it that long, Commissioner, but yes, it's been in design a long time.
Pina Farina, is that the one, or did you change?
Well, remember, there was a Pina Farina.
There wasn't a generator there originally. That's one problem.
Right. The Pina Farina and I forget the name of the other architect, and William Lane effort was kind of a global approach at what these things could look like, and they went through a generic process through, I guess it went through DRB, Roy?
Idea.
And to get ideas and see things that DRB would be comfortable with. Then at some point that pump station was identified as the first one that was going to be addressed in that fashion. Public Works handed us the project a few months ago, and we've been moving forward with that, going through the community, getting buy-in on what this thing looks like, because it's also going to stand in for a neighborhood identification sign at the same time. Because of the magnitude. We've run across some structural issues with the current walls that surround the area that are not able to structurally uphold the structure that we're putting. So that's the part that it's delaying it. We're redesigning the structure so this thing can obviously hold it. Because it's a very large, and if you like, we can certainly share what it's going to look like.
At
least the concept. We can do that for next time if you'd like.
That would be great.
We'll do that.
If not, put in the ground, put some lovely composted dirt and plant some trees around it. It's just terrible that it's been sitting there for such a long time.
Sure.
It's doing the job. It's keeping the streets dry, but it looks horrible.
Just to clarify, members, would you prefer LTC or have it next month at this committee? What Commissioner Malakoff-Alamon preference on
LTC's
that?
LTC's fine.
LTC, David, could we do that?
To show the concept of what this is going to look like? Certainly.
Yep, okay. Anything else on Palm Hibiscus? No? Okay, keep us
going. I was going to wrap up with a West Avenue discussion.
Okay.
Of course, it's one of probably the largest project we have going on right now in the neighborhoods. The design builder was provided the updated design criteria some time ago. And all the details were worked out between ourselves, the city engineer's office, and them. They are working on revamping the stormwater model for the area and taking responsibility for the modeling and coming up with ideas. They're proceeding with the design of all the other elements and already having some public outreach and the such. There's a public meeting that's scheduled for May 2nd at the Mondrian at 6:30 p.m. I'm sure those notices will go out if they haven't already. We're also attending tonight at their request a NAFNA meeting, a North of Fifth Association meeting, that as they have asked us to come out. But right now it's moving. There's no commission action necessary. There's nothing on your end. This is now just regularly working through the process of the design, the outreach, preempting when we start to break ground, hopefully in the next 3 or 4 months.
Great. Members, any questions or comments about any of those projects or some of the ones that were not addressed? Commissioner Alamo?
I was looking over the list, and the neighborhood that I don't see on there is Upper North Bay Road. So what is the status of Upper North Bay Road regarding the undergrounding petition and all of that? Because that's where I remembered that we were at, was they got the exact number of votes after four mailings, right, to proceed with a referendum on the undergrounding. So when is that going to happen? I'm concerned about not seeing it on the list at all, because that, to me, gives me the impression that they're off our radar screen and we're not working on it anymore.
Commissioner, we certainly can add it to the list, but it is on our radar screen. The status of that is we worked with the Homeowners Association leadership to develop a project boundary map, because there was quite a number of questions about what property should and should not be within the undergrounding boundaries for various reasons. And we knew that the percentage to approve the area was going to be, you know, very close and challenging to get, and we did not want to submit a boundary and then miss it by one vote, because then we included a property that perhaps we shouldn't. So we now have a boundary agreement with the Neighborhood Association. We've submitted that to FPL, and then we've asked FPL to take, with the new boundaries, to resubmit to us an exact cost that they would charge us for a binding estimate for the job, and we're now waiting on that time, and FPL's within their timely response now to respond back with that number that we will report back to the neighborhood and to the commission or to this body.
We would like to see a copy of that property boundary that the leadership provided.
Happy to do that. How would you like for that to be distributed to individually, LTC, or back to this committee?
I think LTC. That way, the commissioners that are not on this committee could also benefit, from being kept in the loop on that, right?
Okay.
Happy to do.
And could you include in that LTC then basically the major milestones timeline of when we get that estimate, when the referendum is conducted, and so forth? That's going to be important for us to understand, and for Jacobs to understand, as they do the, revised neighborhood rollout schedule. That has to be a factor.
Okay. Yep. Speaking of undergrounding, I wanted to talk a little bit about the Venetian Islands neighborhood improvements project. Looks like we're doing some redesign for road reconstruction. I see we have some resident interest in undergrounding. Could you just talk about that project, current status, issues? Obviously, we're trying to get updated, but if there are issues where we can be helpful, let's tee them up while we're all here. So,
sure. The road issue is something that the engineer is addressing They hired a sub-consultant, a geotechnical sub-consultant, to get more up-to-date data on the soils condition so that they can propose what they think the best design is that would give us a 20-year life cycle for that road, and then go from there. There's obviously the issues of any culpability or anything of that nature. That'll be part of our analysis that we're continuing to do based on what the new data comes back. And that's something that we're working on a side path to that. In addition to that, there's the two last pump stations that are very, very near coming online at Rivo Alto, one on the north end and one on the south end of the island. And we're working through those. It's been an arduous process with between FPNL and the contractor getting those going, but those should be online very, very, very soon, probably within the next less than 30 days or sooner. The undergrounding effort, we've been working, myself personally, with their HOA. As recently as last week, we met with City Attorney's Office, Nick Allergis to be exact, and including Allison from the finance office, to already discuss proceeding forward with what they have asked a city-funded taxing district or assessment district. As a matter of fact, I have a meeting scheduled for this Thursday with the gentleman from the HOA and Nick to kind of give him a briefing of how that meeting went and how it was discussed. So they're pretty ahead of the ball on this process. We already are moving forward. The FPNL is almost complete with their design. ABB is already working on theirs. We're getting ready to get AT&T working on theirs. They're supposed to be paying them. So we're going to be pretty soon, we're going to be able to bring back something for you all to hear in terms of moving forward with that process. And again, this is only for San Marino and Dalito Islands. Rivo Alto is already undergrounded. So it's for those two islands. And the idea that the HOA prefers is that if we have to make any road repairs, which we will, to incorporate the two projects together as one. That's been their ask. And there isn't really a reason why that could not happen, and that's kind of how we're trying to package this, if possible.
Thank you. That's very helpful. This summary is excellent. And, you know, members, we're going to keep this a standing item and go through this each month like this. Just a question. For residents that are sort of looking for the latest and greatest, this is one good source, just a public service announcement. Someone wants to know, hey, what's happening at the Venetian Islands? What's the latest going on in Indian Creek? Where would we point them?
We're currently working through John Woodruff's office and IT. On a program to put in, and we're putting together. We actually had a brief demonstration at the GOB Oversight Committee meeting the other night. It was kind of the catalyst was the GOB program, and we've utilized that to develop tools that IT is helping us with, not only to address the GOB, but go ahead and do it in a form that extracts the data from the current database that we have for our construction management software, where we keep all our information, and put it in a format that's user-friendly. So that's going to be something that I believe is going to be deployed very, very soon, and it's going to have very specific project information, a little more so than we have had in the past, and that would be the place where that would be shown. I guess I can discuss that with John Woodruff and see if maybe that's something that at some point we can kind of give you guys a little demo of what this thing could look like.
I think that would be great when it's ready. Okay. Members, anything else on the project piece before? I think there may be some discussion around Jacobs and their statement of work. Anything else on projects from the administration? Anything else we should know or issues you want to share with us at this point?
No, we can talk all day long. There's all sorts of good stuff on all the projects, but these are some of the highlights, and everything else is moving along as expected.
Great. So we received an LTC this morning regarding the work that Jacobs would be doing. I think the intent is by Friday that there would actually be a notice to proceed with this work. Members, do any comments or questions you want to share right at this moment? Commissioner Alamon?
I do. First of all, just a little bit of frustration, team that I love. I received this LTC. I've been asking to see this as a draft for weeks, and I wanted to see it before it was final. So to receive it as an LTC is disappointing at best. There are things in here that I think need to be discussed. So I guess we'll do that now. But, you know, to get it on April 23rd, when you say at 10:39, when you say it's going to be signed off on April 26th, gives me the impression that you don't care that much about what feedback we have for you, because we have multiple committees in the meantime. And so I'm gonna read it more than I've been able to read today, knowing that I had committee and an offsite meeting. But let's talk about the
As final as it is, but if there were comment that we would, you know, be able to finalize it, that was the plan.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's final enough for us to share, but if you have comments, please let us know.
Yeah. Okay. So starting with prioritized project list. And I'm reading, this is the third bullet, the third task order area. This list will provide the city and its residents with a defined neighborhood project plan. So this is the rollout schedule for the rest of our resilient infrastructure for the city. As part of the task, Jacobs will develop weighted criteria to rank neighborhood projects. That's what we talked about. These criteria may include objective data, such as the state of water sewer infrastructure. And I know there's other things, the state of the clean water, flooding conditions, et cetera. Or subjective analysis, such as the community's desire for the project. Mm-hmm. Are you kidding me? So, because I have a LTC from our city manager that says our resilient infrastructure is going to be a popularity contest. I'm completely and totally against that. You know, the reason that we were able to save $28 million when we went to go get the GOB financing in New York was because those markets are, their confidence in what we're doing in Miami Beach is shored up by our resilient infrastructure program. I mean, that's why we got the right bond rating that we got. That's why we were able to save $28 million over what we told the public. You know, our CRS score has gone from a 7 to a 6 and now a 6 to a 5. If you combine the savings to Miami Beach residents on their insurance bills, it's $15 million a year savings to our residents. Why? Because we have a resilient infrastructure program. And now this LTC says, if you cry loud enough, you don't have to have the resilient infrastructure. That's not right. That is not what we should be doing as a city.
You can't go to any neighborhood and say, would you like your streets dug up for a couple of years? Would you like us to change your water pipes and your sewer lines? Yeah, we'd like new water lines, but we're going to dig up your street for a couple of years. We're going to have to remove some trees from your swales. Oh, then I don't want it. That's not the way we can do it. We can't ask people. We have to do the work, and when they're finished, when the work is finished, then we're going to have a resilient city, and we can't. I agree with Commissioner Alamont 100%. We can't be what's popular and what's not. It has to be what's going to lead to a city of the future that's going to be resilient and safe for future generations.
Right. You know, every resident has their own unique lens, understanding, circumstances for themselves and their family that drives how they think about this project. But we can't, it's not possible to make every single resident in every single circumstance happy about this and want the project. And that's, I mean, honestly, it's not a goal because you can't get there. I've had residents say to me, listen, you know, my kid's going to graduate from high school in 3 years, and then they'll go to college somewhere, and I'll probably sell this house. So I know we need the program, but could you just wait until my child graduates from high school? Yeah. I'm sympathetic. I understand. Someone else says to me, and these are little things that residents have told me to my face, I'm in my 80s. I know we need it. I'm never going to see it, and I don't want you to ruin the quality of life that I have for my last few years. I'm compassionate about that. I understand where they're coming from, but our municipal policy can't be based on that. Okay, so I stood up at the, where were we? You were with me, Roy, when we were at Must Park talking about this program. And what I said about that, the Jacobs study about the neighborhood rollout was that it was going to be transparent and it was going to be fair and it was going to be based on science and engineering. And when we need to consider things other than that, it would be other things that are going on that are like, you know, rocks in the river that we have to flow around. When is FDOT going to do a project? That's not in our control, and we have to flow around it. In North Beach, we have all the town center redevelopment incentives. We need to try to probably accelerate North Beach so that it makes sense with the redevelopment when we're going in and doing the public rights away. But just to say, the community's desire for the project, I think, is just dead wrong, and I'm very upset that I'm seeing this on the front page of this LTC. And if you had given me a draft the way I had asked you to do, we could have talked about this not on television, okay? But here we are.
Commissioner, if I may, for clarification on the timing, of the intent to execute would be based on the assumption any comments, questions could be addressed. If not, we can delay the execution of this on that date. Now, when it comes to the neighborhood prioritization, what we've expressed to Jacobs repeatedly, and I believe there's clear understanding from all of the Jacobs team, that we want that matrix to be developed and provided to us for our agreement, which means for your approval, at the decision-maker capacity, of what will be included in that matrix and how it will be weighted prior to it being applied to our community. So, therefore, we would all be in agreement. Certainly, when we get the proposal from them, I've heard them speak of as many as probably 20 different items that might be considered for that matrix. We can strike that one if you want right now from this work order. But as we develop that matrix, there may be a number of others that we may want to add more weight to or reduce weight to or delete altogether based on the circumstance. In Jacob's defense, I believe they applied that there because we have told them at no less than 10 meetings, you know, we value community input, and there's a place for it. If it's scientifically not valid, we want you to, you know, not tell us what we want to hear, tell us the facts. But we have repeatedly said to them we want robust community input, so we may have given them the impression that community input might have a higher weight in some scientific things, but I don't believe so. I believe Jacobs Engineering understands we want to hear the community input, but we want them to come back and tell us what the value of that is.
Yeah, if I may, on that one point, and then Commissioner, just real quick on that. I would not be of the mind to strike that item. I understand the feedback. I certainly think science and engineering will drive. We certainly wouldn't be beholden to just the loudest voices. But I could envision a situation where, you know, you have vanilla here, chocolate here. One group really, really is excited and dying to do it, and another group is less. So I think the way Roy described it as a factor, which could be weighted as part of it, I think it's in the mix. It's not determinative, is my opinion.
We strive very hard to have a lot of public input. I mean, in every possible communication channel we can think of, we reach out and hope somebody, you know, shows up to have a dialogue with us as a city about not just this project, but all projects. Not every resident, not every resident comes here. Not every resident wants to speak in public. Most people prefer their privacy, and most people do not want to get into a big conflict with their neighbors. So what I experience when we go and start talking to a neighborhood is that there are some number of people, maybe who don't want the project, who will come here, and if they don't want to yell at us in person about it, they'll either come here or they'll email us. But a lot of people talk to us more, I would say, behind the scenes because they don't want to get into a conflict with their neighbors. And often it's the ones that support the project that will say to me, I expect you all to make the right responsible decisions to protect the future of the city. And I shouldn't have to come to City Hall to every meeting you have to remind you of your obligation and duty to do the right thing that preserves the city for the future. And they're right. They shouldn't. So now you've got the sentence on the page. You're going to have to figure out what to do about that. I don't know if you need policy direction from the entire commission at this point, but this had better not be a popularity contest, or there won't be a future. And that's all I have to say about that.
Okay. I, too, will take some time here over the next day or so and try and give some feedback. I did have a chance to do a first review, but I'm going to reserve my comments. I'll share them with you, Roy, in advance of Friday. And then I think you can take Commissioner Alamon's feedback, any other feedback from Commissioner Malikoff and I. And then if that all comes together,
however best you want to sort of report back to us. But I think the headline is we all take this extremely serious, that this is an important exercise, and we want to make sure it's going in the right direction.
Thank you.
Okay. So I believe we've now completed our...
Quick comment on this, please.
Okay. Quick comment, Bob, please.
So many issues you all have brought up, it's hard to put it all in context. I just want to say, 2 minutes you're giving me, that's very nice. We have tried so many times in the last 10 months to clarify what our situation is. This last Friday, we got a letter from Public Works saying that Lakeview project will be postponed until 2021. We're very happy with that in one respect, because it gives us time to negotiate a whole range of issues of which we have complained about. Mr. Malikoff, I agree with you on the monster in front of Publix looking like a horror show for years. On the other hand, telling us that you have to run through this whole process of taking down our trees and digging up the road and everything else without our permission is absolutely unconscionable. I want to say two things. Our position with We Love Lakeview is to work with the city on a comparable, positive program that doesn't destroy us. There are people who are pushing this project. They're going to make big money on it. It has nothing to do with us. We have come to you several times already on the basis of, A, quality people. In fact, 2 months ago, we had a person here who came and said, I can do this project for 10% of the cost. I don't have to tear up your trees. I don't have to destroy Surprise Lake. And I could give you a whole infrastructure in our streets, not for 3.5 years, but for 50 years, it'll work without all the craziness. And you didn't even ask for a proposal from this guy or Public Works. So this is not a question of us not wanting to work with you. It's our questioning what the city is up to. At the commission meeting on the 10th, I presented to you a paper that we had gotten from South Florida Water Management that your project on Cherokee and Surprise Lake was a total disaster. You didn't get the permits. You put up false stuff. You put in rocks. It all went out as a fill into the lake, which is destroying the lake. And what did you do? Nothing. Nothing mentioned to the city manager or to Public Works.
Mr. Chair,
so
would you like...
how are we to trust you that your situation...
Mr. Chair, would you like to allow additional time?
Yeah, if we could just try and wrap it up here,
I'm going to wrap it up. I'll give you basics. Okay, there's so many issues here, okay? The issue is trust, and the issue is honesty, and the issue is working with the people in our community. We have 160 names. We have people who do not want the project as it exists in its present form. And because you forced our hands, we've now had to reach out to every agency possible, statewide, Army Corps of Engineers, EPA, you name it. We're going after everybody in order to find out what you guys are doing. We've met several times already with Public Works, and we have already met with the city manager. We've had several meetings with all of you. We appreciate it. But you guys need to come up with a better program. If I read that stormwater is being handled in Orlando much better than what we're talking about here, why isn't Miami Beach taking a standard of leading instead of following? And why aren't you coming up with a new technology that doesn't disrupt our lives and make a whole mess of it?
Thank you, Bob, for your comments. I appreciate it.
I'm going to give you paperwork that I will submit.
Adrian, do you have a quick word to here?
Good afternoon. My name is Adrian Gonzalez. I'm 5000 Lakeview Drive. I'm also the elected president of Lincoln Road Mercantile Association a long time ago, of the Lakeview HOA. I first of all want to thank you guys, because we've been with Commissioner Alleman. It's been very diligent on meeting with you guys. We had an amazing meeting, which Eric Carpenter and all the other city officials came out. A lot of our residents have now kind of changed their perspective, their understanding. They understand the importance of the Jacob Engineer report that's in progress right now. We're all looking forward to receiving that. We're all part, most importantly, to be part of the process. I would say majority of the Lakeview residents are informed now. They want to know more. They want to be part of the process, which will avoid any misunderstandings, any misinformation, and moving forward, I think, is going to be the best solution to make everybody in the Lakeview community happy. We're all on the same page. We all want the same end result. We don't want inconvenience, but we want progress. We want to make sure that everything is being done the right way by the law and so forth, and especially for our environment and everything else. Again, we want to commend you guys because we all feel educated more on what's going on. We're seeing actual facts, not just myths. And a lot of the residents now, apart from the impactful meeting you guys we had with us last time, basically joined the HOA just after they understand and they now are knowledge on what the whole process works and how it is and what we're looking at actually in the process.
Great. Commissioner Alvarado. Can I
comment? Thank you, Adrian. And yes, thank you to Eric Carpenter, Roy Coley. I can't remember, was it you, Elizabeth, or was it Margarita? Your department was there as well. I was there the entire time, and we spent, I think, 4.5 hours at Must Park answering. We stayed there until almost 9:40 p.m. To answer every question that everybody could think of. So it was a great discussion and really a great starting point, not an ending point, to that ongoing dialogue and education, because my feeling is that from these Jacobs pieces of work, the other two that I didn't talk about, the first one was the blue-green concept plan. So what does blue and green infrastructure mean in the residential context, but in the residential context of Miami Beach, which varies because Lakeview is not exactly like North Bay Road, is not exactly like Normandy Isles, is not exactly like Central Bay Shore. So every neighborhood has its own, we overuse the word character, but it really is true. Every neighborhood has its own character. The neighbors use the neighborhood in a unique way, and that can be not just the entire neighborhood, it varies from street to street. And the City of Miami Beach staff's objective is to understand it just that granularly, you know, that on 51st Street, people need their swales to park on, but on the water side of Lakeview Drive, not so much. So every street is different, and it is absolutely the goal of the city to understand every neighborhood to that level of detail, down to every single house. And so what does a blue and green infrastructure mean when we need to leverage the public rights away, whether they're swales, whether they're parks, how is it going to work? So that's that deliverable. But it's going to be iterative. You know, Jacobs is going to do some work, going to need to show it to some people like you, get feedback on it, and it's going to need polishing. The road raising evaluation with a 3.7, and this doesn't specifically on the first page talk about the road bed, but it might say it deeper. I haven't had a chance to read the entire thing. And then, of course, even the prioritized project list, my hope is when that before we ever see the actual Gantt chart of neighborhoods that should spit out the back of this algorithm, is that first we'll talk together about what the criteria are. What are all the factors in the algorithm? Quality of infrastructure, you know, the experience of residents from flooding and so forth, but also what are the types of other subjective sorts of things, those rocks in the roadbed, what are they? And how do we make sure that we identify them properly? And some of them may also move. You know, for example, FDOT is they're a great poster child for it because we don't control their timing. So we have to identify what the FDOT projects are and establish a mechanism by which if FDOT changes the schedule, you know, we know in a way that we can react to, because currently we find out about FDOT projects on a Friday before they start on Monday. And that's not going to work when we have our own multimillion-dollar infrastructure projects to plan around them. So I hope that we'll see the criteria first, and we'll need to get back together with you and your neighbors to talk about what those criteria are and get your input.
Excuse me, I want to mention one thing, please. You have one HOA with Adrian. We've already mentioned to the city manager and to you we're forming our own HOA. You need to address our issues, not just his issues. Who has the majority is not an issue for us. We have a number of homeowners who are upset with the way this whole thing has been presented, and you need to come to us, not just to them, and sit down and talk with us and stop playing this game, because that's what gets me very outraged. He can say what he wants in terms of the numbers. We don't care. It's perfectly okay. But we are forming our own HOA of people who are disagreeing with what is going on here. And we want to come up with a credible program, and you need to address your energy to us as well as him. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for those comments. And we're going to move off of this item now, but I just do want to be clear. I strongly echo my colleagues' comments that in terms of the interactive approach with our community, listening, that is part of this process for all constituents in the area. So people will continue to be heard. We're going to move on right now in the interest of time. So I want to move if I may, Adrian, we're going to keep rolling here. Item number 9, because we are talking about stormwater, I'm going to jump over to that. If we could talk about the pump stations, who's going to give us an update on that one?
Commissioner Salmon, commissioners. The item for discussion on the pump station plumes on West Avenue, we've had some discussion on this with you, and I'll give you a brief update. We did receive bids today for some rehabilitation work on some underground piping that we have identified as having some inflow and infiltration on 6th Street between Alton and West. So once we're able to evaluate those bids that were open today, then we can make a decision on those improvements. The other thing that I can share with you is I had the opportunity to discuss the pollution control devices with John Bolton, who is the DOT engineer that first brought those into our community when the DOT was building 5th Street, 10th Street, and 14th Street. It was their design that started us with those, and we learned from them how to use them, and we've reviewed those with John Bolton, and he has volunteered to come inspect all of our work, our maintenance activities, and then actually have the manufacturer here to determine if everything is working as it should. So just one more step towards making sure everything's working like it's supposed to and we're doing what we're supposed to. But just some of the history of that is the DOT designed those original ones, and then when the city started building pump stations, we just completely emulated their design because our consultants at the time, which was AECOM, thought it was very reasonable designs and advised accordingly. So now then we'll get their review and a manufacturer's review to make sure before we do any more that that we are doing it the best.
Okay. Members, any... here.
No, I mean, I'm glad they found the infiltration breach. Is that appropriate? I don't know if that's an appropriate word or overly dramatic, but I'm glad you've been continuing to try to figure out what the source of the problem is there, or maybe it's multiple contributing problems and address that. So
it's likely multiple, but we did find an area of our drainage system that we believe was built in the circa 1940. It's a square box culvert that contributes to this drainage basin area. And it did have some inflow sites in it we found through internal camera that our team found. And so we know once we make those repairs it'll make a difference, whether it will completely solve what we've seen in the past. You know, we're cautious to say that, but we know it will make some difference and we can get that repair made.
Good. Good.
David?
Keep investigating.
Thank you. What about 10th Street? Pump stations. Have we figured out on 10th Street? Because we're noticing the same similar problems on multiple pump stations, not just 6th Street.
And that's exactly what we're looking forward to the manufacturer and the DOT engineers to help guide us. We have not identified anything at 10th and 14th Street that's systematic. Anything that has come out of any of those outfalls, we've not identified a true source. So whether it was how something's getting in the system there, we don't have an answer for you.
When we're talking about the manufacturers who are going to come review, is that the folks who make the Vortex units are going to be coming out?
That is what the DOT said they would ask for them to do. I have not spoken with the manufacturer of the units. I've been speaking with the DOT engineers.
So just to be clear, if we are having similar issues, say, on 10th Street, Roy, this work would be attempting to address not just 6th Street, but other locations where similar issues. Is that correct?
We have comprehensive inspection going on everywhere. We're looking for any potential site. We have our environmental inspectors from our Environment Sustainability Department. They're out inspecting construction sites, trying to determine Do we have somebody dumping things in our system or not? Is that the problem? Is it normal pollution? We're trying to find those items. What I can remind you and say that the item that we had on 6th Street, if it is the same, we did over 100 parameters of water quality testing there looking for various pollutants, and the only thing that was identified was sulfur, which indicated to us it was the infiltration. It was not benzene or any of the things that would make you think it's oils or something very terrible being dumped in the system. So we do know that at 6th Street, and then we just keep investigating and checking these sites looking for reasons.
And are we asking Jacobs whether our designs for the pump stations is what they would recommend? I know Jacobs is doing a lot of different things for us, but are we asking Jacobs to say, if you were building this from brand new, what would it look like?
This current task you have before you does not address that. That would be addressed during a design criteria package. So once Jacobs delivers the four things that we ask for, which is a concept plan for integrated water management, i.e. blue and green infrastructure, road raising strategy, project sizing, and project sequence. And once those are done, if we had an approval to move forward, then we would ask them to design the design criteria package that would address those specific items. So their current task doesn't specifically address that.
That's understood. And what you're saying, though, Roy, is at the right time, taking advantage of their expertise is part of our thinking, not as part of this initial task, but we certainly want to make sure where we have one of the world's largest, most preeminent engineering firms that we would tap into their expertise at the right time. Is that fair?
That's absolute, yes.
And that's before we start construction on any new pump systems or designs?
That's before any new projects. Our project on West Avenue has already been awarded. It went through the Columbia Accelerator, and they reviewed the designs or facilitated the review. So Jacob's task does not include the West Avenue project that's going on now. It was already awarded before Jacobs was brought on board.
I think we're mainly concerned about, because we have multiple pump stations that are exhibiting curious flows, that before we build any new ones, you know, there have been people who have questioned whether the design is sufficient, and I have no expertise to indicate that, but I'm hoping that before we implement additional pump stations and start on any new projects, that they take a look at it. Because we have
David,
problems.
You're painting a gloomy picture, but in fact, there's a tremendous amount of sampling being all over the beach, all over the waters.
Mm-hmm.
Lots and lots of samples. It's not just from one spot or five spots. And of 63 different areas. And so far, through the Miami Beach Water Quality Sampling Program and the data collected, it was concluded there's no indication of sanitary system leaking into this, which is the main thing.
True.
That's the main thing you try to prevent. I mean, absolutely try to prevent. And there's no indication whatsoever of any sanitary system leaking.
I do not believe that there is any sanitary leakage.
Yeah.
I understand that those are fully separate
and
systems.
Before we had anything, before we had outfalls, before we had, I mean, growing up in Miami Beach, what happened was the gasoline from the old cars would go into
sure.
the bay, and everything would just go naturally into the
sure.
water, because that's the way
when
the
I,
system worked.
Absolutely. When I started my advocacy 6-7 years ago, I was promised that these new Vortex units are going to be leaving the water super clean and filtered, and that's not what I visually see. So my concerns are, you know, I've had people tell me, well, injection wells and this and this and this. And I don't know the answer, what it is, but what I can tell you is that it doesn't look right. There's a lot of turbidity, which is just stirring up. There is other stuff that, I mean, it looks like a 1980 diesel Mercedes-Benz. And all I've heard is that, well, the only thing in our sampling that tells us that is that it's sulfur, right? But we see a lot of stuff.
But I believe, I mean, Mr. Coley can say better than I can, but my understanding is that the vortexes themselves move quickly, mm-hmm. and they do filter out pieces of plastic, you know, the stuff they're supposed to filter out. But the regular water that's going through also has sediment in it that goes right through because it doesn't screen everything. And when it goes out at a force, there's going to be some turbidity when it hits the water, right. and then it settles. But if it continues and continues and continues, when there's not any rain issues,
right. I guess what I'm suggesting is that there's a lot of people who seem to not be happy with seeing these big black plumes.
That's because of social media,
Durham, right?
A lot of people is due to social media.
I'm sorry, I have one
picture goes out.
I have a video. We have videos from 2 years,
yeah.
and where we've asked this question about what is it? What is it? What yeah. is it? And the best
why
we can
why we've
say,
done more sampling.
That's right. And Dave, thank you for those comments. We obviously take this issue as important. Roy, as you address Commissioner Malikoff's comment, could you just sort of summarize the next steps? Because we're not done with the item. What are the next steps? Because we do need to move on to some other things.
Probably the thing you might be most interested in is our staff, our engineering team, our environmental team with Durham has spent quite a bit of time at all of these outfalls recently and have a hypothesis that a lot of what might be seen is caused by scouring, and that investigation is continuing, that maybe simply the movement of water and the very soft fines on the bottom is being stirred up. So there is conversation going on about perhaps the city installing what they call scouring pads and materials to prevent that and to prevent that turbidity stir up. So we don't have an exact plan or a commitment, but that's one of the ideas that seems to have the most interest of the most people right now. And so I think the next step is we want to determine if that's appropriate and move on it while we continue our other things. So that's just one of the items as far as the vortex. Commissioner Malikoff is correct. They do remove a great percentage of sediment, but they do not remove 100%. They are advertised at removing 80 or 85%. And what we want to find out is, are they actually removing that? We know anecdotally they remove a lot of pollutants. We take a vacuum truck out there and suck out what looks like, you know, mud. Out of the bottom of these things that if these vortex structures weren't there would have all gone out into the bay. So we know we're sending out better water than if we didn't have them. We just don't know if it's good enough. And our pledge is to continue working. And whether there's complaints or not complaints, you know, you've got a team in environmental and public works and engineering and CIP that want to make it even better.
Great. Well, we definitely want it better, and I think we should keep this item on the agenda. Mm-hmm. If there's no material update in 30 days, then we'll defer. But I think we want to be close to the process, so I'd like to keep it as is, and we'll hear the latest as we proceed, as you've outlined.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we're on to item number 5, discussion regarding how green infrastructure, including living or hybrid sewer lines, can complement gray infrastructure. This is Commissioner Steinberg's item. Ms. Wheaton, Betsy, do you want to tee us up, or we have help?
Good afternoon. Margarita Kruif with the Environment and Sustainability Department. We have a very short presentation for you to give you an update on what living shoreline projects we have been working on and what's to come with green infrastructure. Just for those of you that are not familiar with what a living shoreline is, it's basically taking organic materials, natural things like plants, vegetation, rocks, to create habitat and stabilize a shoreline. And there is a wide range of options from the solely vegetation to the most engineered and everything in between. So we look at each site and determine what's appropriate based on the site conditions. This is an example of a living shoreline that we've had for many years. When I started at the city, this was one of the first projects that I got to close out at Pine Tree Park. And this is what it looks like when you look at the shoreline. It's a combination of rocks and mangrove vegetation that we've used here. Similarly, at Marie Skip Park, which happens to be my neighborhood park, we have an existing living shoreline created a while back by Miami-Dade County, also using riprap rocks and mangroves, and it also has a boardwalk to allow people to go through it. And we're looking at this as an opportunity to actually revamp the shoreline when we come in to redesign the park. And one of the ideas here is to actually allow people to immerse themselves with nature. If you go out now, there's actually a fence separating people from the mangroves, and we want to redesign this so that people are actually interacting with the mangroves. So this is just a map showing some of the most recent projects that we've worked on. There's a combination, some that include kayak launches, and I'll go through them in order of how they were completed. At Parkview Island, we restored the shoreline with mangroves and removed invasive vegetation and added a kayak launch, and this is what it looks like from the water. At Musk Park, we rerouted a seawall, a traditionally engineered seawall, around a mature red mangrove and added new mangrove vegetation and other wetland plants to the area. This is Brittany Bay Park. As you can see, the seawall was failing, and it allowed mangroves to recruit along the shoreline. So we used the same design as at Musk Park, where we brought the seawall in to the park and created a seat wall where people can sit and actually look at the mangrove shoreline. And we're going to be, we currently have completed phase one, which is the engineered elements, and we'll be coming in through a CIP project to replant that area and create an overlook. This is what the seawall looks like when it's been redone, and you can see the seat wall in the back of that photo. And Indian Creek, we lost a lot of mangrove habitat when we had to redo the seawall that we couldn't salvage. And we actually removed a lot of invasive species like the seaside mayho. It was a very drastic change for the area. We really felt the loss of the habitat, and we know that the community did too. I know when I drive by there, I definitely miss those mangroves. So what we did was worked on a project. It's a landmark project because usually environmental agencies do not want you to plant mangroves in the water because that's also seagrass habitat. So they don't want to prioritize one type of habitat over another. So this is actually a very difficult type of project to permit, but we've worked with all the environmental agencies to develop a draft design that will be coming out to the community shortly to present, where we will be building mangroves in the water at in Lake Pancoast, so that in the future, when we have to redo the seawall, which we know we're going to have to do, we don't have to touch the mangroves ever again. So we're trying to think a little bit more forward thinking with these projects. Our next focus is, you know, now we have the Living Shoreline project and program ongoing, and our new focus is on looking at inland green infrastructure. A component of that is being done through the Jacobs contract, but we actually have expertise in-house where we've looked at the Natural Department of Illinois has developed all of these different cross-sections that we can look at where they are applicable within our city and develop green infrastructure projects like the bioswale that Public Works is working on. We have a grant to actually keep our last unpaved alley unpaved by using green infrastructure concepts in North Beach at Everglades Court. And so Stan Kolosofsky, our environmental specialist, has actually developed some of these concepts to put into our public works manual. And I know that that was a lot of information, but hopefully that you have, if you have any questions, I can answer those as well.
Just a comment. I really appreciate the projects where we've done the green seawalls and the design at Brittany with the outlooks so people could actually, you know, get in amongst the mangroves but still see the water is very thoughtful and beautiful. They're still going to be few and far between because the only place we can really do a robust mangrove installation is going to be along public property, public waterfront, because unfortunately most waterfront private property owners, that's not the aesthetic that they want. They want the wide open view of the bay. So unfortunately, I don't think we'll see a lot of mangrove coastline, especially where the private properties are. But at least I do appreciate that as a city that we're thinking that way and that we're showing that those projects can be beautiful and showing some of the techniques that you do about how to make it, you know, even more accessible so that it's not just a wall of trees but something that can be ergonomic also for humans and beautiful. So thank you.
And I will offer this, if you don't mind. One of the reasons why we want to be the ones going through this process is the permitting is not easy. But we've learned a lot by going through that process. So if there are any homeowners that are interested in looking at this in their homes, we're definitely here to help and support that and helping them navigate that process.
Thank you for that. And thank you for saying, too, specifically about Indian Creek. Those neighbors are really looking for the return of the vegetation.
I had asked to co-sponsor this. I'm very interested in living shorelines, but you didn't mention, well, you mentioned a little bit about the riprap with the stones. Individual homeowners could do that because that's not going to interfere with their view of the bay, and that will help wildlife and crustaceans as well to develop, which is good for our seas. What about oyster beds? I know they've been used in other communities very successfully, but I'm not sure our tropical waters are good for oyster beds.
You make an excellent point. We actually looked at that for the Lake Pencoast mangrove shoreline. We initially had a concept with mangroves and oysters, but there's two types of oysters, and the kind that actually survives within our waters is not the kind that is actually reef building or community building. So the experts that understand these designs don't recommend it for our particular environment.
Because they strengthen the seawalls as opposed to tearing at them as some of the roots of the mangroves might. The oyster beds really make them stronger. Too bad. We'll need a new variety of oyster.
Very good. Thank you for that helpful update. Let's go to item number 6, memo to report on Miami Beach special events and the environmentally friendly guidelines and procedures. Sponsor is Commissioner Gongora. And we have Matt here.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Matt Kenney, Director of Tourism and Culture. Just closing the loop on a little over a year, deferred items. So basically, we had worked with various city departments, including Betsy's Department of Sustainability, to really work through what our special event guidelines are. These did go through Finance Committee and Commission already, so this is just kind of closing that circle to let you know that the sustainable guidelines that have been put in place for our events, mostly outlined on the second page there. One of the big kind of outlines I would say is in terms of beach cleanups, how we are waiving application fees and vehicle beach access passes for groups that want to, for I should say small groups and nonprofit organizations that want to do small beach cleanups. We continue to stay in contact with the state because there is so much cohesiveness with our events that take place on the beach and what is going on in the state. So one of the updates we made just 2 weeks ago with Betsy's team was now our permits internally link directly to the state's permit. So any violation of a state permit is a direct violation of our permit, which was not necessarily the case before.
Okay. Members, questions or comments on this item?
Nope.
No.
Good
Anyone
job.
From the public, anything? David?
Hi, good afternoon. Dave Doubler, Chair of the Sustainability Committee. One of the things that we did when we were in our committee was we proposed a number of ideas. And so before this gets finalized, I think we'd like to take a look and see whether some of our ideas were incorporated and maybe provide some additional feedback.
So this was finalized. It is finalized already. It was passed through commission. This is just an update on what was finalized. But I don't know of anything that wasn't incorporated from what was presented to us. There was nothing not incorporated. Okay. So I can send you a version of that and you can
That'd
take a look.
Great.
Let me know.
Thank
okay.
you.
Wonderful. Matt, is there anything else you need right now?
I'm good.
Very good.
Thank you.
Okay, so we'll keep rolling here to item number 7, discussion on considering a neighborhood bird sanctuary project. Sponsor right to my right here, Commissioner Alamon. And do you want to tee us up? Or here?
Yes, and welcome, John, as
Hello,
well.
Thank you.
I don't know if anyone remembers the bird sanctuary project. So we've been working, well, I say we. I really took a lot of credit there. Elizabeth and others have been working on it for quite a long time with John Lacko, who won a grant having to do with a bird sanctuary. And so you all have been working together. So I think I'll let you remind us all sort of what we're trying to accomplish.
So the public space challenge was the challenge that was put out by the Miami Foundation. And the project was based on the designation of Miami Beach being a bird sanctuary. And that was kind of the genesis of what I wanted to do the project. The initial presentation to the Miami Foundation was to create living art, to create living art for birds and bird habitats. And after meeting for several months with Elizabeth and environmental, we decided to focus on more natural habitats and kind of move the focus back toward the other part of the project, which was a visual representation of like almost like a face to the project, and create almost like visual kiosks for the parks so that people could go in. And I don't know if we have the slide, but to create some visual representation for the park to kind of talk about the sanctuary and create almost virtual kiosks and portals for information for people to go and learn about all the different programs that are going on in the beach and learn about the sanctuary and the project. So, and that's pretty much it. Yeah.
That's great. How exciting. Members, any questions, comments, anything specifically you need from us today, Betsy?
At this point, the next steps would be if this committee wants to see this move forward, we would incorporate the ideas into our resiliency signage program that a number of departments in the city are working on to communicate climate change, environmental issues, including the importance of birds. We also have our street tree master planner who, kind of an addition, and this kind of sparked our imagination here, is developing the plan and looking at, as they're recommending trees, what type of birds are going to be attracted to those trees. So, you know, what birds are going to nest there? What birds are going to forage within certain trees? So I think as we're furthering developing that street tree master plan and the resiliency signage, this is a good fit. We'll continue to coordinate with our internal team, Parks and Recreation, to make sure that we're putting them in the best locations within parks, and then of course communications to make sure that whatever signage and the kiosks are city standardized.
Okay, and as I understand it, John Locke is not looking for any funding from the city. Mm-hmm. He has already obtained the funding from the Miami Foundation, so it's really just our support and endorsement for him working with the city administration to see the successful completion of the project. So I would move the continued support through completion.
Yep,
I second the motion.
Show it done by acclamation. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Wonderful project. Our last formal item before the sustainability report is item number 10, discuss the use of pesticides, herbicides, and fertilizers on both public and private property. Commissioner Alamon is the sponsor.
Again, Margarita Grief. Last month, you heard a brief introduction to this item that emerged from a Lakeview discussion back in March regarding the concerns about what pesticides, fertilizers, or herbicides might be doing to our waters. I was not here last month because I was actually at a roundtable of other regional water quality experts where I had the opportunity to brainstorm with some of them about how we can tackle this particular issue. And a lot of their concern, as well as that of our experts in green space as well as in parks who we have here today, and they can answer questions or speak about this, is really the improper use of these chemicals. We already have a number of different practices that we use on public property to try to reduce our dependence on these chemicals, and we use our best professional judgment to balance the aesthetic needs of the community with the desire to try to keep these from our watersheds. We have a number of different options that we want to put before you to try to help enhance our existing efforts on private property, and they can be summarized as follows. To educate the public, we have a Keep MB Clean campaign that we could expand in order to help homeowners better understand when the application of these chemicals is appropriate. We've seen that campaigns around $25,000 can really help us design good messaging and get it out in the community. Another option that we would like to recommend is training. So we currently have licensed landscape maintenance professionals that are coming into our city. We may not be able to control where they're buying the chemicals, but if we required training of them and developed either a curriculum or had them go through specific certifications, that would be a great way of tackling this issue. And then other communities also look at restrictions and bans, but we think that that might be very difficult for us to enforce, which is why we're recommending education and training first.
Members, questions or comments?
I like the recommendations. I'm still not, I know you're right about enforcement, it would be quite difficult to enforce. I'm still not opposed to a ban necessarily, because it sends a strong message, and I think at least some of them would notice it and make an effort to comply. Not that I think it would be a good use of resources to go around and inspect what chemicals people are using. That's probably not going to happen. But I'm okay with all of these. I think these are all goodness.
So the idea, I guess, on this table would be at least to start with the MB Clean in the training.
Mm-hmm.
A motion here from the floor.
Commissioner Malakoff, do you have any
Other thoughts?
I thought there was something in the report, but I don't find it. Have any cities actually been able to ban the glyphosate?
Yes, we actually banned it on public property use.
On public, right. But I'm talking about all properties because all properties end up in our waters.
I know that the city of Miami recently passed a glyphosate ban. I'm not sure whether that included private property. I don't know, Nick, if you're aware of whether.
I'm not sure.
But we can definitely find out.
Because it seems to me if we could ban the use of Roundup or Ranger Pro or whatever the other ones are that have that, that really is going to help the quality of our waters and throughout Florida, actually, but certainly in the Miami Beach waters.
So I'll move the first two recommendations on the last page, which is expanding the Keep MB Clean campaign to include water quality and requiring the professionals to attend the training. Let's start with that, and then maybe we'll learn something about what other cities have been able to enact as far as a ban or reconsideration later.
Show that done by acclamation. Thank you very much. Dave Dobler, a quick update here from Sustainability. We've got you coming up and down here, so get on back up here.
And, committee, I apologize. I have to pick up my son from school, so I'm heading out.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Lamont.
I'll call you later.
Okay. Thank you. Good afternoon. Dave Dobler, chair of the Citizen-Led Sustainability Committee. We had a good conversation last session. The first thing was we made a motion to support the bird sanctuary program, which was just there. We would have known that if we'd gone ahead of him. It sounds like a very cool project, and the Miami Foundation does a lot of work to ensure that the projects that they fund are well executed. The second conversation that we had was about the fleet. We reviewed the fleet assessment of the city vehicles, and I was not actually surprised to learn that the highest fuel usage comes from our police vehicles. I wasn't surprised by that because I often see police vehicles just idling as they are directing traffic or whatever they're doing or inside the cafes. What I was encouraged with was that the fleet management is looking to get one of the first hybrid Ford SUV police vehicles. And I think this is a really great idea because they have bigger batteries that can keep the AC running and keep all the computers and the lights running without having to have an engine running. We're going to move forward with a motion, but we wanted to hone the language a little bit more because what we're really looking for in the committee is ways to reduce greenhouse gases in their entirety. The obvious was to suggest that we move to hybrid and electric vehicles, but one of our members thought that we might want to define this a little bit more based on greenhouse gases, and so we're all going to go back and we're going to bring this back up at our next meeting, which was canceled for next week, but will be the month after. Our committee will be looking for ways to reduce consumption of fossil fuels in these. And so electric vehicles, replicating what City of Coral Gables has done and some other cities is interesting to us. The final thing is it is Earth Month, and so it has been a very busy month for those of us who spend a lot of time protecting and fighting for those that can't speak. And so I'd like to remind everybody that turtle season has started. So when we're talking about special events or lighting, we need to be very cognizant of those things. And as well, I'm very excited that the city is doing a tree giveaway on Saturday and a composting workshop at Flamingo Park. I'll be there picking up some new houseplants. So I encourage everybody to go pick up a nice tree. I'm hoping that maybe we can get an avocado tree or something like that. So I don't think we're doing fruit trees, but lo and behold, oh, we are. Yay.
We're really excited. We actually have balcony mango trees that are specific for balconies, and also a Brazilian berry tree that is also good for balconies. So we did look for fruit-bearing trees as well as native species that will go in yards.
And Betsy, a quick public service announcement. This is Saturday, 9 a.m. Location and details, please.
Sure, yes. We are going to have a tree giveaway at Flamingo Park at the PAL, you can come at 9 a.m. to noon to pick up a tree, but come early because a lot of times we run out morning continues. And Yanni will be able to tell you the exact time of the composting workshop.
10:30.
Yes, that's correct. The composting workshop is at 10:30, and it's possible thanks to the Botanical Garden and also the University of Florida.
Wonderful.
And I got to say that I just redid landscaping at my place, and we picked up a lot of the composting, and I'm very appreciative that Botanical Gardens exists, that they are doing cool things that would otherwise be really impossible. I've become a huge fan of the Botanical Gardens as of recent.
Wonderful. Dave, thank you for those messages, reminders, and the service of your committee. I look forward to finding some trees there Saturday at 9. That sounds great. And I think on the hybrid cars, particularly with police, that's an exciting opportunity that I think the wheels are in motion. So it would be great for your committee to weigh in with that. With that, I believe we've covered all the items. Members, anyone up on the dais with any other closing thoughts? If not, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.